Welcome to the O Woman Podcast, where we discuss so many things related to women's sexuality, bodies, thoughts, and lives. We'll talk about everything from our relationships to our orgasms to our children and our ovaries, and we'll share outstanding experiences and ordinary ones. I'm Emma, and a big open welcome to you. Thanks for joining me for the show today. This is episode 71 of the O Woman Podcast. Really excited to be with you today, and really excited to start a new series on the show that's called Your Sexual History, that focuses on your sexual history. So your past understanding of sex, experiences with emotional relationships that are romantic in some way, that sex is inevitable at some point, if that's the case. And this is going to be definitely a multi-show series. At this point, I think I've got 7 or 8 episodes lined up that should be in order. I should be doing them in order. I might throw a couple other topics in there just to kind of mix it up. But I also might do all of them in a row. So today's the first episode. And the reason I thought to do this is because I feel like talking about your sexual history and how it shapes you, that's really what this is about, is so multifaceted. It has so many layers to it that I didn't want to just gloss over it. I thought about doing an overview show, but then I realized that it would be better to just start off with one chapter, really, of what makes your sexual history so important, how it shapes you. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about some things that are really positive in your sexual history, but I also wanted to spend a little more time too talking about things that can be negative, because I don't want everybody to assume that your sexuality is going to be a positive experience all the time. It's not. And some people have had much more scarring and hurtful situations than others. I've never had any very scarring or hurtful situations, and I'm grateful for that. But I also didn't want to just, you know, paint a picture of sexuality that was only my own. I wanted to talk more about all the other things that are related to it too. And some of these things are my experiences. Some are experiences of friends, of women I've spoken to, just so that you are more aware of how your sexual history is such a controlling factor over your sexuality. And knowing your triggers and knowing how things affect you and knowing how your past has changed your life and made you who you are as a sexual being, as yourself, is going to be a really great thing just for you to know more of yourself, for you to be able to tap into your sexuality in the ways that are the best for you, in the ways that are the safest for you. But then also at a certain point, and we'll talk about this later on kind of as we go, knowing your sexual history is going to actually make you more aware of ways you can reroute this history and reroute the memory of things that have been hurtful, perhaps, or positive to use to your advantage. If hurtful things have happened to you in your life, but you still want to have an active, positive feeling sex life, as most people do, then you have to face the past, think about the past. And I'm not a therapist, I'm not a doctor. I'm an empathetic person who loves to talk to people and loves to hear stories. So I can't give you expert advice, but I can share things so that you feel like your psyche's opening up more to things you've experienced, so that you can look at ways to process it and think about why you are who you are today, why you are who you are sexually. And you can think about if you think you need help, asking for help, or if you think you want to share your story, share it, whether it's positive or negative or anything in between. So today I wanted to focus on, obviously, your sexual history, but how your parents and your family shape you. Just beyond what we know, you know, we copy our parents in a lot of ways, whether we want to or not. We copy their relationships, whether we want to or not. And we can consciously choose not to copy their relationship if we don't like the way theirs has gone. But there's still part of us that wants to kind of default to that, just because it's easy, unless you are super active and aware all the time of who you want to be and if it doesn't align with them. Thinking about stepping outside that box and trying not to be that way. But one of the biggest ways that our parents and our family shapes our sexuality and our sexual history and our beliefs about ourselves is their beliefs about sex. And this is kind of obvious, but there's so many layers to this. Now, this is different than their actual behavior towards sex. Like, if you know anything about your parents' relationships with each other or with other people or their lives or, you know, that kind of thing. If your parents are open and speak with you about sex, you know, or if they don't. Their beliefs about sex is not always the same thing as actually their sexual life, because that also influences your sexual history. It influences you. And maybe if you don't even know their sexual history, but you just know their romantic history, or the way they treat men, or the way they treat women, or the way they let themselves be treated by men or women. All of these things affect your concept of what sexuality and relationships is supposed to be. Because let's face it, those are interrelated. Romantic relationships and sexuality are just innately interrelated. You cannot have a romantic relationship without a sexuality involved. Perhaps you've chosen not to include sexuality in that relationship, but you still had to make it a choice. You couldn't just have a romantic relationship and not have sexuality come up. It comes up. Maybe you choose not to do it if you're waiting for a certain point, or if you're abstinent, you know, or something. But it still is a topic. It still is something that must be addressed. It's not just a given or a void that no one needs to talk about. So, in talking about your parents' beliefs about sex, there's a lot that you absorb from watching them talk about other people, and also yourself, if that's a thing. For example, one of my friend's mothers was always so concerned about her sexually when she turned into a teenager. She was freaked out that she would have sex. Not even that she would get pregnant, but she was freaked out that she would have sex. She was just so freaked out by the whole thing. And it wasn't because she was going through a phase where she was nervous that, you know, she was growing up and she would lose her, that kind of thing. It was that she was just freaked out about that sex, that intimacy that came with it. And that always affected my friend. It always made her feel that there was some sort of shame, some sort of stress that had to come along with sexuality, because her mom put that on her. So that when she entered into thinking about having sex and being sexual, she could never just be her own sexual self without her mom in the back of her mind. Maybe she didn't hear her mom talking to her, but there was a lot of subconscious memory of the way her mom dealt with sex. And this is the case with a lot of women that I know, whether it's their mom or their dad. A lot of it comes from parents being worried about their daughters and being worried, oh, are they going to get pregnant? Oh, are they going to get taken advantage of? And there's something to that. You need to, you know, watch out for your children and watch out for your family. But there's also even more to be said for trusting their decision making at a certain point. And letting them be the humans they're going to be. Letting them be the people they're going to be. And this is not to say, oh, let your kids go out and do whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But trust them to be smart enough to make decisions. And let them trust you. So that you can actually be an ally for them. You can actually be someone that they come to talk about that kind of thing. So that they feel comfortable with you. And they don't feel that you will judge who they are. Because one of the things that I've noticed in speaking with different women is that the women I've spoken to who have sort of an association with sex that is less than ideal in their opinion, their sexuality was hindered to some degree, or their beliefs about themselves sexually was hindered to some degree because of parents saying certain things. A lot of it was because parents tended to have the mindset that what you do when you're a teenager means something about you. Like, if you have sex when you're 14, that means you're a whore. It's not just, like, a young person learning and making a mistake. It, like, somehow means you are this kind of person. And I don't know why that is a thing, but a lot of women I've spoken to have that when they've had sort of negative experiences with parents and talking about sex and, you know, that kind of thing. That is a thing. I didn't have that kind of relationship with my parents, so I can't speak from, you know, firsthand perspective. But a lot of my friends and people that I've spoken with, in that case, it becomes kind of a scary thing, engaging in sex. And sex should be scary, but for different reasons. Sex should be scary on a level of like, oh, I want to make sure I'm safe. I want to make sure I'm choosing the right person. But it shouldn't be scary on the level of you doing this activity, you choosing to engage in this activity, which, by the way, is an animal activity that you cannot deny unless you are planning to deny it, you know, for an extended period of time. You know, it's a bodily thing that makes sense for some people to be interested, for everybody to be interested in doing it, obviously, clearly. But in this case, the way you deal with sex, teenager, you know, this is kind of like a parent thinking, it shows me your character almost. It becomes, unfortunately, a display of your character to some parents. And it shouldn't be that way. It's not a display of your character. I mean, if you rape somebody, okay, that's a display of your character. But that's not related to sexuality in the same way. That is a violence. That is a sexual violence. That is not a variation on sexuality. That is in the normal range. And most people are never do that to other people. You know, most men or even women never do that to other people. But your sexuality and the way you choose to engage in it, when you're, especially when you're learning how, you might make mistakes. You might do stupid crap. You might wish you hadn't done that. You might wish your parents had said, please stop doing this. Maybe they did. Maybe you didn't listen. But it doesn't affect your character. It doesn't mean you're any less of a good person or any worse of a decision maker. And I just want to say that because women that I've spoken to that feel sort of scarred by the way parents have treated them and acted towards them when it came to sexuality, is that says nothing about you. That only says that whichever parent was making you feel stressed, that they weren't doing the right thing by you in that case. And you can choose to forgive them. You can choose to move on. It's up to you. It's your life. But it says nothing about you. It only says how they handle it. It only shows you what kind of a person they are as far as how they can handle talking to that about you, or talking about that with you. Another interesting thing too that affects women, I know it affects men too, but I'm speaking more just for women because I'm a woman, is not even comments from parents that are necessarily sexual in nature, but have to do with your body or your personality or something about you and how much they believe that to be naturally sexy or not. Even in children, comments are made about, oh, you're too chubby for, you know, for that boy to like you, or not even related to a boy liking you or anybody liking you, but you're a little too chubby. You should lose weight. We need to go on a diet. Things that already begin to undermine that little future woman's idea of who she's supposed to be on a body level, and on a sexual level, because your body is innately sexual. And we know how much body image can affect how comfortable we are with sexuality and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to talk about that in a future episode in more detail. But I wanted to mention today, a psychologist who's named Pamela Madsen, and I found some articles that she'd written online and some things that she had to say, and I really liked a lot of what she had to say. And I also wanted to find an expert so that when I quoted someone, I was quoting someone besides myself when I was talking about this and sharing other ideas and terms that aren't just mine, you know, that I kind of made up or thought of. But she talks about how when girls are, you know, made fun of, but not even in an obvious way, they end up getting a disassociation with their bodies. They become disassociated with their bodies. Their personality and who they perceive of themselves to be and how great they are becomes disassociated with their body, meaning their body isn't working for them. It's working against them. It's not really part of them. It's something they're supposed to change and make better or fix or make it reflect the way they think it's supposed to be. And this author, Pamela Madsen, talked about, she still remembers the moment that she had that feeling of feeling disassociated from her body. It was when she was 7 or 8, she said, and her dad had a business friend visiting. She said, even at that age, you know, children are not sexual, but they have impulses to be interested and be social and be excited about someone that they think is cute or someone that they think is special or someone that has charisma. And she kind of had a crush on her dad's business associate. And he was apparently a handsome Italian guy, and he had a handsome accent, and she was describing how handsome he was. And she was just talking to him and asking him questions, and in her mind, being a cute girl who was into this older guy, but not in a creepy sexual way, because she's a kid, she doesn't really know what she's feeling. She's just feeling excited and energized by his presence. And she's talking to him and asking him questions, and her mother said, not to her, but she said to the Italian guy, she said, "Would you please tell my daughter that handsome Italian men do not want to talk to chubby little girls?" And she said she remembered in the moment that the man was kind of like, okay, that's a little awkward, I'm not going to say that, because that was a little bit rude. You know, you could tell that by his face, but it just crushed her. She just felt crushed by that comment. And she remembers that was the big moment when she started to feel disassociated from her body. Before that, there was no separation between her personality and how special she was and her future sexuality and her body. But starting then, and then through other comments in the rest of her life, something broke. Something broke and separated her out and made her multiple people during different times and made her feel more disconnected from her body. And she kind of defines this disassociation with your bodies, and talks about it more, and says that it has to do with feeling separate from the natural connection between our bodies and our sexual nature, which I think is one of the biggest things that parent and family criticism does between our natural bodies and our sexual nature. One of my friends was telling me that she's like, I don't know why I had some issues with my sexuality and feeling comfortable and feeling capable of achieving this and that. Because I was so comfortable being naked. I was comfortable with bodies. I was comfortable with my body. I was comfortable with nakedness. And I didn't even have the feeling really of shame, like, oh, I don't feel attractive enough when you're naked, when you're having sex. But there can still be psychic wounds. And Pamela Madsen calls these core erotic wounds, which I think is a really great way to put it. But there's still psychic wounds that are associated with feeling criticized or feeling less than who you should be by people you trust the most, your parents, your family, your older siblings, even your younger siblings. And I think that's a really interesting thing to point out is even if your parents are fantastic, as most people's parents really are, most parents are pretty good people. And, you know, they're trying their best in most cases. But even if that's the case, they can still say some shitty crap. And they can still really affect the way you think about yourself on a long-term scale, even though they don't think, oh, that's not going to affect them. I said it one time. It might, you know. So if you're a parent or if you're going to be one, think about that. Think about how that could affect, you know, your children in the future. Another thing, too, that makes that concept of you doing this when you're a teenager or when you're first becoming a sexual person, acting a certain way or doing this a certain way, means something about you. Kind of this is a character thing, the way you approach sexuality. Are you loose? Are you not? Are you, you know, waiting for the right person? Or are you just having sex with someone you think would be a great person to have sex with? One reason why that's such a dangerous concept, that has to do with your actual, your character, which it doesn't, is so dangerous is because oftentimes that is what family, you know, ends up saying or mentioning to you. But family is so much more influential than other people. So if, you know, think about like at your job, your boss might say that decision you made during this course of the day on the job was screwed up, and therefore I feel as though, or they, you know, they don't even explicitly say it. It's like an implicit thing in the way they're talking to you. I feel like your character's affected. That was a horrible call on your part. Like, your character's not what I thought it to be, you know, if they say it that way. And that's going to hurt your feelings, but it's unlikely that that's actually going to leave a real permanent scar. Because, first of all, you're old enough now where you can fend off all the bullshit that comes flying your way. You have a pretty good sword, and you're pretty good at parrying all the crap and getting it out of the way. But also because it's not your family. It's not the people that you trust the most in the world. It's not the people that wiped your ass and gave you food and took care of you forever. It's not that person. So when it is your family, it's so much of a harder hit when it is a hard hit. And it goes deeper, even when it maybe isn't even as bad of an insult, because of how sensitive you are to what your parents have to say and to what your family has to say, because you love them. you love them so much and they love you, but you love them so much. You want them to respect you. You want them to think you're a great person. Just like they want to feel that way about you. They want you to think that way about them. So also another family member that I haven't touched on quite as much is older siblings. And this, I want to talk about how older siblings are actually, they're interesting. I don't have one. I'm jealous. I don't have an older sibling, nor do I have a younger sibling. I was all by my lonesome, which turned out fine, I think. But, older siblings are interesting because they're someone that in general is going to be raised in the same family environment as you, share a lot of the same ideas about life, at least when you're younger as you, but they're going to be entering the sexual scene before you and not in the same era, not in the same world in which your parents entered the sexual scene. So sometimes big siblings can be like a really great like relief from parents who are overbearing because you're able to look to them and watch them begin to mature and choose romantic partners and choose sexual partners and probably, you know, get to talk to them about it if you're open, if you're close with your siblings. So that can be a really good thing, but also depending on how different you are or how different your ideals are, you realize as you get older from your siblings, it could be another difficult thing, like dealing with the way your parents think about your sexuality and your life and that kind of thing too. So older siblings are really cool because they sometimes take the brunt of the parents going, "What the hell are you doing? That's inappropriate. That's not cool." And sometimes they can shed that off and deal with it fine, or sometimes they're negatively affected by it. But you might not get as much of a, you know, as much of a hailstorm if you, you know, when you enter into your own sexual scene. They might be less stressed out about you because they saw their older child get through it okay. And then you have an ally too to talk to. So I think it's really cool. Older siblings are a really great thing in this world. In this world, of course, but in this case, so the other thing I wanted to talk about that I sort of mentioned that Pamela Mazden mentioned, is that with criticisms that are either told to you directly by your parents or criticisms that you perceive about your body or your capability or your character as it relates to sexuality, or even, you know, if you feel comfortable being sexual, but you're thinking, I've never been able to have an orgasm. You know, why is this? Think to your parents. Think about it. There's a chance. Who knows? We don't know why things happen. But you just have to look at your sexual history, look at your past, and think about it. If your mother is freaked out by sexuality, even though she's had you, she's had kids, if she's bothered by it, if she thinks it's, like, too open of a thing or too lewd of a thing, even if she's not worried about if you have sex before or after you're married or any of that stuff, but if she just thinks that it's a little bit too raw of an experience for her, she's afraid of it, maybe because it makes her face her relationship realities or her sexual realities, something about she's hiding something, who knows, she has a tension and a frigidity almost about it. Even if you feel like you've been able to push that away and feel comfortable with sexuality and stuff like that, who knows? Perhaps that fear and that worry and that frigidity with sexuality, that willingness to, or that unwillingness to embrace it and to realize that it's a joyful part of life, might affect you so deep to the core that it's actually affecting your ability to get all that you want to out of sexuality. There's so many layers to the way family affects our life. And of course, you are an active participant in your life. You are able to think about it and try to change it a bit. And when you're growing up and you're being bombarded with ideas by parents, by other people about sexuality, a good portion of the way you form your sexual ideas comes from you, of course, too, because you're active. But parents are so influential. Family is so influential when it comes to this. You know, think about a mother or father who is really adamant about you waiting until you get married to have sex, or waiting until you get married to even move in with the person you want to be with. Think about that. That might not be a thing for you, but if it is, it makes a lot of sense why, if you grow up as a teenager and you don't agree with that idea, or you agree with it at first and then you realize, this isn't feasible for me, this isn't feasible for my life, I don't think it has anything to do with my character if I choose not to do that. It's going to be really hard to reconcile that changed belief with the idea that your parents have, which is probably that is part of your character. If they believe that you should wait till you're married, there's going to be some innate belief that they have that if you don't, that says something about your character. Just a reminder, it does not at all. You're still just as fantastic and good as you were if you decide to wait till you have sex when you're married or not. But with that underlying belief about, oh, my kid disappointed me, or, oh, they made the wrong decision, they went down the wrong path, that is hard. That's hard to deal with. Another thing that parents, or another way that parents really, really affect the way kids think about their sexuality and their history and if they're allowed to be sexual or that kind of thing, how open they can be, is the parents' sexual activity. And this is separate from their beliefs about sex. I said this earlier. So knowing the way, if your parents are still together, the way they interact with each other sexually. Are they open about their sexuality? Do they keep it hidden behind closed doors? Think about how maybe that has affected you. Is sexuality, can it be a discussion? Are you allowed to talk about things? Is nothing really taboo and you're allowed to ask questions and be open and learn from them? Or is it something that you never talk about? That is inappropriate. That is not allowed, whether with your mom or your dad. That really affects your ideas about it. But, and then if your parents are not together, what sort of relationships they've had before or after your mom or dad was with them. And thinking about that, I can think of one specific example, a girl that I knew in high school who would have sex with a lot of guys. She was sort of my friend. I knew her a little bit. And I remember her becoming more and more quote unquote promiscuous. She had sex with a lot more people as the years went on. And didn't really ask for anything in return, and didn't even seem to ask for orgasm in return. I remember that being kind of a thing in my mind. I'm thinking, okay, I have sex with lots of people, but if you're just going down on a guy, what are you getting really in return? To me, that seemed rather like a, I want to please someone kind of a thing, instead of a, I like sex, and let's trade off kind of thing. And then I got to know more about her life and more about her story. And heard more about her parents and how their divorce had gone, was that her dad, this is right around the beginning of high school, so it was a really formative time for her to start believing and thinking about the way men are supposed to treat women and the way women are supposed to treat men and the way you're supposed to be with people or not. Her father cheated on her mother and left the family and never apologized to anyone about it. And she'd heard her father call her mother all sorts of horrible names in the process of the divorce being bad. And divorces can be messy. But, you know, him calling her a whore or and horrible names in front of the two daughters in the family, that she heard this, you know, said. And he cheated on her mother. And once he got divorced, he had lots of girlfriends that he would bring and bring around his daughter. And she even said one time, I remember we were hanging out in a group, and she even said, I think the way my dad treated my family and I think the way my dad treats women has affected my life. And of course it has. But she made the connection to realize that she used him as a model because he was her dad, of course. You still, deep down inside, believe they're good people. You still love them, of course. That she used him as a model for the kind of men to choose, which in that case was a poor choice. The kind of men to choose, in that case she chose men who didn't really love her for who she was, who didn't respect her body and her space, and who didn't have any loyalties to her and want to make her feel special, just wanted to take care of themselves, and didn't mind abandoning her, you know, quote unquote, after sex was over. It was just a one-time thing. Which, in the case of people that just want to have one-night stands, fine. But this was in her formative years, and she didn't, you know, afterwards, she wasn't happy. You know, it wasn't like, I just want to have sex. It was, I want boys to pay attention to me. I want someone to pay attention to me the way my dad left me when I was in high school and stopped paying attention to me, stopped coming to visit, except when he brought girlfriends, and didn't just tell me I was beautiful the way I was no matter what. I felt like I had to start proving myself to men because I never was enough for him. And not just that he left my mom, but that he cheated on my mom and that he acted the way he did. And, I mean, this is kind of a classic story, but it's common with people. The way their fathers and their mothers approach sexuality and talk about sexuality can have such profound, lasting effects on your ideas of what make you valuable. What makes you valuable? Is it just your sexuality? Is it your sexuality that makes you worth it to spend time with someone? Or is it just who you are as a person? And in this case, that concept that Pamela Mattson has, where you're separated the natural connection between our bodies and our sexual nature, the girl whose story I was just talking about, that's another way that you are separated from your body, because you're using your sexuality and you're comfortable with it, but not really. You're not comfortable with it. You're using it to a certain end. You're using it so that you hope that the rest of your body can follow, the rest of your personality can, and your life and your identity can follow along and catch up with your sexuality. If someone is okay with you sexually, perhaps they're going to say, I think you're great in other ways. And another story I want to share, I know this is kind of a long episode, but another story I want to share is another friend that I had in high school. This is just very brief, but she was actually roofied and raped her first time ever. That's what happened to her. Wasn't her fault, obviously, as it never is. She was at a party where she thought she trusted the people, and she was roofied and raped, and her dad did not believe that it wasn't her fault. She told her family, which, thank God she did. Most people don't. A lot of sexual abuse goes unnoted, which is so unfortunate. She told her family, and her dad's response wasn't, I'll go kill that guy, which is what, in my opinion, it should have been, even though he shouldn't act on it, you know. But his response was, well, what did you do to make that happen? I don't believe that it wasn't your fault. Something else had to have happened. Talk about way to make someone feel like they're worth nothing, like their sexuality is not valuable, like it shouldn't be guarded and protected and made to be a safe space. And I know you can all kind of guess how horrible the repercussions emotionally are of that. Beliefs about what you're worth sexually and just you in general. Beliefs about who you are as an entire person is worth. It's just such a hard story to hear, but I mean, it happens to plenty of people. There's a lot of women that get abused and hurt and their families don't listen. So if you're one of those people and you're wanting to think about your sexual history and think about your current sexual state and the way you are, you have to look back. I'm not saying you have to, you know, relive all those experiences, but just think about how the repercussions from that affect you and affect how comfortable you feel in your own skin and how comfortable you feel with a partner. At least thinking about it and knowing it is going to help you get started on the right track to getting the sexual experience that you want and that you've always deserved, that maybe you were denied because of strange negative influences from parents. Or also, you know, of course, on another scale, positive influences from parents. If you have parents that are open, that'll talk to you about sex, that won't judge your actions and think, oh, that was a horrible decision. What kind of a daughter did I raise? That just think, that was a mistake. Well, I still love you. I still think you're great. I don't think that actually changes who you are. And that's going to be a positive thing because you're going to feel like you can come to them as an ally. If they're talking to you about sex in a healthy way, and I've done an episode on talking to your kids about sex. If you're talking to your kids about sex in a healthy way, they're going to come to you as an ally in many cases. They're going to trust your opinion. They're not going to think, oh, my mom and my dad are old, you know, weirdos. They don't think about, you know, modern enough. Yeah, they might not agree, but they're going to at least listen. And you trust them. You know they have pretty good advice, you know, at least ways to be safe and ways to respect yourself. So if they're talking about it in an open way, then it's going to be great for you because you're going to have the chance to speak with them and work over issues that sometimes friends at the age when you're learning how to be sexual might not know exactly how to talk to you about sex because they might be figuring out on their own too. So it's kind of the blind leading the blind in a totally acceptable way. But it could be better to have an older helping person, like an older sibling in this case too, help you figure out what the hell you're doing. You know, figure yourself out. Figure your sexuality out. Figure out what you want to do. figure out how you want to be, you know, and then of course change it if you want to. It's just a figuring out stage. So I just wanted to throw a little bit of this out there today, just talking about how important your family is in your sexual history. So if you're, you know, if you're not in the sexual relationship that is your ideal right now, or if you're in a relationship but the sexuality inside of it isn't exactly what you want, and you're like, what's holding me back or what's holding them back? Think about your sexual history. Think about how your parents and your family have shaped you, and think about ways to unpack those ideas, and think about how can you change them? How can you work through them? Chances are it's going to be better for you than worse. And if you feel like you need help, find someone to help you. None of us are in this alone, ever. And none of your sexual history in the past is your fault. It isn't your character. You can't look back in time and say, oh, I had sex when I was 14 with a guy I didn't even know. That says nothing about your character. That says you were a young person figuring it out. Maybe you made a mistake, maybe not. But you're still a human being and you're still a good person. And that's the bottom line, is reminding yourself of that and ingraining that in your brain so that you know, hey, I am sexually awesome. I need to remember that. So this is just the first episode in our series about your sexual history, and I'll be continuing this tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, I love talking with you guys, and I cannot wait to talk to you tomorrow. Okay, bye.